What is up, Bitcoiners? Welcome back to another episode of FedWatch. Antal, I'm excited for this one. You got a great breakdown of what is happening across the world. A lot of things that I think Bitcoiners are really excited to learn about, talking about supply chains, talking about blackouts across the globe, talking about Australia, China, Taper. Lots to go through here. Antal, what's up? How's it going? And I mean, do you want to talk about last week's episode with Evergrande and things like that? But I guess back to you, what's happening?
Yeah, lots of stuff seems to be coalescing right now in macro. So there's lots of stuff to talk about. Last week, just to touch on that for the audience, you were traveling. I did it by myself. That's the first time that I did a FedWatch by myself. But since I am somewhat of a experienced podcaster, we got that recorded and that will be coming out actually tomorrow as we're recording this. So this one will be coming out next week. But yeah, lots of stuff to get to today. Where should we start?
Yeah. So, I mean, Fed news, interesting here. Boston and Dallas presidents are resigning. You want to just jump right into that?
Roughly 24 hours ago. So it's late breaking. The Boston Fed president, Rosengren, and the Dallas Fed president, Kaplan, have announced that they are resigning. So the way that the Fed works, for those that don't know, is that there's 12 regional banks, and there is a, I think there's 10 people on the FOMC, that's the Federal Open Market Committee that makes policy. And so there's a rotating where some of them, some of the Fed presidents don't sit on the FOMC every time. But these guys were two longstanding members of the FOMC, and they have been embroiled recently in some insider trading talk around the 2020 crash and subsequent policy decisions from the Fed. So they were in somewhat of hot water and they decided to step down and resign. After this, Powell announced that they're going to be going over some like ethics review of their policy. You know, I thought these guys could insider trade because the Congress can inside trade. They can sign a $1 billion contract with some company and then go out and buy their stock before anyone else knows that they're the ones that got the contract. So I thought the Fed could do this. But yeah, Powell said they're going to review their ethics policy. And then these two guys, Rosengren and Kaplan, they said that they're going to donate this quote unquote ill-gotten gains. They're going to donate it. So, you know, there's no conflict of interest, they said. So what are your thoughts on this?
I just feel like these are fiat problems. And at the end of an empire, there's a lot of corruption. And these two had to resign, but there's been a lot of heat on Congress. You know, the Pelosi's, Nancy Pelosi's husband is investing quite a bit and, you know, investing in ESG. And she is pushing forward that narrative and that agenda and those contracts in Congress at the federal level. So, like you said, there's insider trading everywhere. And again, I think that that's a part of the fiat system we have. And it's also part of like this late stage of an empire, fourth turning, all that kind of stuff. It all fits together.
It's also human nature, too. I mean, Powell has made a lot of money in the market. Gensler has made a lot of money in the market. And when they get these jobs, what are they supposed to do? Just liquidate all their assets? No, they have vested interest. The problem is that you put a human being in charge of it instead of like Bitcoin, you know, it's programmatic. So it takes all of this moral hazard out of the system.
So I guess for people who don't believe Bitcoin fixes this, Antal, like from a fundamental level, how would you explain why a hyper Bitcoinized world would have less of this?
Would have less of like insider trading or less of this corruption?
Yeah, systemic corruption.
Okay, so whatever assets you own, you are naturally going to be inclined, even to the best of your ability, you are still going to have bias towards your decision-making. So if you are on a rulemaking body or a lawmaking body, all of your decisions, all of your votes, everything that you do is going to have this inherent bias in all of your decision-making. So with Bitcoin, you just take that decision-making out. You take that monetary policy decision out of the hands of fallible men. And you put it in the hands of the protocol. And so that is why Bitcoin will, I mean, it won't get rid of 100% of corruption, obviously. That's as long as humans are involved in some decision making somewhere, there's going to be some corruption. But yeah, taking it out of the monetary policy is huge.
Yeah. I mean, again, I would say that's kind of like the base perspective of Bitcoiners is the reason Bitcoin fixes this is because it's the separation of money and state, similar to the separation of church and state, and just removing those power structures from each other and making them separate is going to alleviate a lot of the ailments that our current society is suffering from. So that's kind of like the base case. And part of the reason Bitcoin fixes this is because our current monetary policy is so corrupt and so manipulatable. And, you know, one of the things that is manipulatable about it is the Fed, rather than actually changing monetary policies, they have to just continuously impression management, right? They're constantly just managing what the market, what people are thinking, and they're keeping investors kind of like on their toes with what they're going to do next. And the biggest case of that these days is the rumor of taper and taper soon. So Ansel, what is the latest on taper and why is taper something that the Fed is kind of just waving at investors?
Well, we've been talking about this for several months now that everyone has known that Fed is thinking about tapering, but they don't know when. Powell wouldn't put a firm date like September, we're going to start tapering. Anyway, last week they had the September FOMC meeting and Powell said they will start soon, quote unquote soon. And everyone's thinking that means in the November meeting, which is their next meeting. So he has, quote unquote, teed it up for a taper announcement in February. And for those that are kind of new to this central bank stuff, the taper just means like right now they're doing quantitative easing, that they're buying $120 billion worth of securities, whether that's US treasuries, mortgage-backed securities, or agency securities from the US government. They're buying $120 billion worth every month. And taper just means they're going to wean themselves off of that. So maybe November, they'll buy 110 and then 100 in December, et cetera. And then Powell said last week that it looks like next summer is going to be the end of the taper. So that's what we're looking at for taper. Now, it has been a crazy buildup. And like you said, expectation management is their policy tool. That is what they use for monetary policy is expectation management. And my question is this the right time to taper? As we'll get into here in a minute, is the world seems to be coming up on a lot of crises. There's an energy crisis in Europe. There's these energy crisis in China. There's Evergrande, the real estate conglomerate that's going down. We have the stock market today selling off pretty dramatically, the dollar surging today pretty dramatically. So is this the right time to taper? Now we can tie this into this first story that we talked about, the Fed presidents resigning. Kaplan and Rosengren were two kind of hawkish members. So if they're resigning, does that change the voting makeup of the FOMC? Are they going to be replaced by more dovish members that would be members that will vote against the taper, that they want to extend loose monetary policy further? So there is a lot of questions going on right now. And it's funny, we talked about this a couple months ago, that September, October, end of the third quarter seems to be where a lot of stuff happens almost every year. Any financial crisis, there seems to be a lot of stuff that happens in September and October. And so right now we're in the thick of it. This is a very interesting time.
All right, Bitcoiners, I want to tell you about our newest sponsor. This show is brought to you by Ledin.io. I have been super, super impressed with the guys over at Ledin. I've actually known the co-founders, Adam and Maurizio, for a very long time. I've had the pleasure to watch them build Ledin up from a tiny, tiny startup to now a super impressive institutional grade Bitcoin and crypto lender. Y'all, I'm so impressed with these guys. They are offering some of the best rates out there. I don't think anyone even comes close to touching them. You can get 6.1% APY on your first two Bitcoin that you deposit into Ledin interest accounts, and you can get 8.5% on USDC deposits. I mean, I know all the competitors. They're not even close. If you're going to put your crypto and your Bitcoin into an interest account, Ledin is by far the best. And on top of that, like I said, these guys are hardcore Bitcoiners and they know the products and the services that Bitcoiners
want, and appreciate. They came up with B2X. It allows you to put your Bitcoin in, they leverage it up, and you can, with one click of the mouse, get twice the exposure to Bitcoin. So if you're super bullish, Ledin has you covered with a super, super easy way to get leverage with B2X. And then on top of that, they know that Bitcoiners care about your reserves. They know that Bitcoiners don't like under-reserved and not full-reserved financial institutions. So they are pushing the frontier in transparency in the digital asset lending space. And they are the first digital asset lender to do a full proof of reserves and proof of attestation through a Mariano LLC, a public accounting firm. So the Ledin guys, they know what Bitcoin is like. They are legit. I encourage you guys to check them out. Do your own research and go to Ledin.io. That is Ledin.io and learn more.
I'm very excited to hear from you how this all ties into Bitcoin. Again, historically, fall during a bull market is when things go pretty crazy, but things on a macro perspective are really heating up and kind of getting pretty negative. And it's not just like political or quote unquote economical, it's like really resource allocation, borders, international conflict, reduction of things that people have come to expect in the world. We're seeing it here in the US big time, these supply chain issues, but they're really starting to be felt globally as well. Give us the latest on what's happening from a supply chain perspective.
Well, this week, the big story is the European energy crisis, and I'm going to share my screen real quick. So if you guys are on YouTube, you'll be able to see this. So this is from Bloomberg, came out yesterday. Europe's energy crisis is coming for the rest of the world too. And as we scroll down here, I'll just read some of this. Nations are more reliant than ever on natural gas to heat homes and power industries amid efforts to quit coal and increase the use of cleaner energy sources. But there isn't enough gas or fuel to fuel the post-pandemic recovery and refill depleted stocks before the cold months. Skipping down, inventories at European storage facilities are at historically low levels for this time of year. Pipeline flows from Russia and Norway have been limited. And then this chart, if you guys can see this on YouTube, is a European natural gas price chart. It's euros per megawatt hour. And as you can see, it goes back for 15 years and nothing like this has happened in recent memory. Just this year, prices have gone from about 10 euros per megawatt hour to upwards of 70 euros per megawatt hour. So it's a pretty steep increase in a very short period of time. I have more, but Christian, I can stop here for a second if you have any comments.
No, keep going.
All right. So how this kind of is contagion around the world, it gets into that here. The spike has forced some fertilizer producers in Europe to reduce output, with more expected to follow, threatening to increase costs for farmers and potentially adding to global food inflation. In the UK, high energy prices have forced several suppliers out of business. Even a normally cold winter in the Northern Hemisphere is expected to drive up natural gas prices further across much of the world. In China, industrial users, including makers of ceramics, glass, and cement, may respond by raising prices. Households in Brazil will face expensive power bills. Economies that can't afford the fuel, such as Pakistan or Bangladesh, could simply grind to a halt. Okay, now this is where the inflation bit comes in. The prospect of accelerating energy costs in conjunction with squeezed supply chains and food prices at decade highs could make more central bankers question whether the jump in inflation is as transitory as they hoped. Traders will be carefully dissecting every weather forecast published from now until December. So what I want to say about that is simply they want to make you think that these supply chain issues, the reduction in supply of natural gas and spikes in prices due to that, are money printing, right? They make prices go up, but they're not inflation. That's because they have a piss poor definition of what inflation is. They think inflation is just any kind of price increase, but inflation is specifically printing of money. And so I just want to pound that in and keep saying that every week, because these types of price increases are not due to inflation. They're actually due to a deglobalization effect. Supply chains are breaking down around the world, not just that these fertilizers are going to go up higher in prices, or the glass and ceramics, but the silicon, the chips, all this stuff is going to go up in price, which has a trickle-down effect into the rest of the economy. So if you can't get your supply and prices go up in a bidding war, then that's not inflation. That's actually deglobalization. So what do you have to say about that?
No, I think you're completely correct. And I mean, ultimately, what is happening is the complete breakdown of several institutions and like the pullback of several macro trends. Right. So we are pulling back from globalization. We're seeing the decrepit democracies and bureaucracies all throughout the West break down. We're seeing everything that has built up China start to dematerialize. We're seeing all the leverage in the financial system start to bite back. That is all happening all at the same time. And, you know, that's going to have these catastrophic global macro effects that touch on every aspect of our lives, and prices are going bonkers because of it. And none of that has anything to do with the manipulation of the monetary system. Like, that is all happening on top of this, right? Making the monetary and economic hurricane even more insane for us who are living in it, you know? Like, there's the stress of the pandemic, there's the stress of authoritarianism, but every single person in the world is living in a monetary hurricane. Some of them, you know, are in a more calm area, aka the US, but everyone is being just constantly barraged.
Obvious question is, why is this happening with the prices? And it's very opaque to people. It's hard to just say supply chains, because that doesn't make any sense to people. But when I looked into it more, one thing that I found that I think could be a pretty big factor in all of this is China's embargo, or whatever you want to call it, trade war with Australia. So in January of this year, they stopped purchasing coal from Australia. And then Australia had to find other customers, and China had to find other sources of coal. But you can see how that would cause some ripple effects. China did start importing from the US more coal, but they also started importing more natural gas. So they are bidding up the price for natural gas that would have gone to Europe. From Russia would have gone to Europe. Now it's going to China. Then there's a bidding war that really bids up these prices. And if you go back to that chart that I showed of the price, here, I'll share it one more time. If you go back to this chart, it's completely exponential. You know, this
Describe it really quick, just for the listeners.
It's showing from 2005 until like March or April of 2020, natural gas prices were roughly 20 euros per megawatt hour. It fluctuated up to 40 and down to about 10. But I would say the average of those 15 years was 20 euros per megawatt hour for natural gas. And right now, over the last 6 months, it's spiked all the way to 70 euros in a pair, like a straight line fashion. Now, that is not a move that is sustainable. Something broke in the economy. It's not like this was slowly developing over a decade. No, this was flat line for a decade. And then in the last 3 months, it jumped up. So what has changed? And that's where I go back to the Australia thing with China and their trade war going on, which sucks some supply out of Russia that would have gone to Europe. And there's a bidding war. So you can see how all of these things transpire. But this spike is not sustainable. I mean, I wouldn't short it, because it could double again from here. But within the next week or two, this is going to find some sort of top, and probably natural gas prices will be back down to 20 within a year's time. So there's no shortage of natural gas in the world. It's just that the supply chains are backed up right now. That's all.
Yeah. I mean, it would be interesting to check that in the year and see if the prices do come back. We could also see supply chains just continue to break down. Who knows how long this could go on. And even if like a free market could kind of like come back to equilibrium in a year or so, we might see a even further politicization of all of this. And that could just make it even worse in terms of just what is happening with energy across the globe. I'm seeing kind of two trends. One, it's like we're seeing supply chain breakdowns being allocated, like price increases around that being allocated to inflation. But two, we're also seeing the active dismembering of energy resources in the West. And then importing of natural gas to effectively make up for dismembering of nuclear, dismembering of other sort of like not green energy. And we're even seeing that in China. And I just feel like that is going to have compounding negative effects. And then on top of that, there's this narrative like, oh, this has something to do with climate change, that like climate change is causing Texas to not have energy. Like climate change is causing California not to have energy or blackouts, when really it's like, it's kind of a combination of a lot of things, including natural habitat mismanagement and the dismembering of nuclear and other localized energy sources.
Yeah. And I think a really key term here is efficiency, efficient use of energy. So you can have the same amount of natural gas output, but you're going to run into shortages because of inefficient use. That kind of brings us into the Chinese story. And let me see if I can find this here real quick. So the Chinese have started seeing major power outages around the country. And it seems like the Bitcoin miners got out of there just in time, because the power grid is having some major, major issues. I'm going to share my screen again here. So Chinese cities in the dark after widespread unexpected blackouts. Chinese thermal coal futures have more than doubled in price in the past year. Power cuts to last until next spring, or spring next year. Just yesterday we warned, I had some highlights here. There are several reasons for the surge in thermal coal. And so this is out of China, of course. Among them, already extremely tight energy supply globally, the sharp economic rebound from COVID lockdowns that have boosted demand from households and businesses, a warm summer, which led to extreme air condition consumption across China, the escalating trade spat with Australia, which had depressed the coal trade, and Chinese power companies ramping up power purchases to ensure winter coal supplies. Whatever the reason, it's just getting started, the BBC reported. One power company said it expected the power cuts to last until spring next year, and that unexpected outages would become the new normal. That's what I have for the Chinese thing. I think the main takeaway here is that China is running into major problems, not just with the Evergrande, now with the power supplies. And it seems to me that they're falling very quickly, very fast, and things could get out of hand in China. What is your takeaway from the Chinese power outages?
Bitcoiners, I am so excited to tell you about the Bitcoin 2022 conference. You guys, Bitcoin 2021 was absolutely a smash hit success. It was over 13,000 Bitcoiners coming together, breaking the barriers on who can come together and celebrate freedom, celebrate Bitcoin, and the energy was absolutely electric. Unfortunately, it was just oversubscribed. There's just people flowing out everywhere. And this year, we are learning. We are making the conference bigger and better. We are moving over to the Miami Beach Convention Center, and we are going to be throwing a massive four-day festival for Bitcoin, celebrating Bitcoin, bringing together the greatest minds in Bitcoin and the greatest businesses in Bitcoin. And lastly, the culture of Bitcoin all together. We have a four-day extravaganza planned for you guys for Bitcoin 2022. Day one is going to be industry day. It is a day where you can buy a special ticket in order to just mingle and make business deals happen. Day two and three is going to be a full-blown Bitcoin conference. This is our main conference. This is going to be on April 7th and 8th. And then lastly, we have the Sound Music Festival day four. Imagine going to Coachella, but for Bitcoin. There's going to be very few talks. It's going to be all about the culture of Bitcoin. It's going to be all about hanging with your fellow plebs. It is going to be an absolutely amazing time. There's going to be Bitcoin musicians, Bitcoin artists, and all your favorite Bitcoiners, and just an amazing environment to party and just see it all, soak it all in, and to get people to realize that a Bitcoin world, a world filled with Bitcoin people doing Bitcoin things, is the world that they want to live in. That's what Bitcoin 2022 is all about. That is what the Bitcoin conference is all about. That's what Bitcoin magazine is all about. So it is going to be a celebration of Bitcoin, the Bitcoiners, and
this amazing movement that is going to make the world a better place. Go to b.tc/conference, learn more about the Bitcoin conference, learn more about all the amazing things that are happening in Miami around the Bitcoin conference, and buy your tickets. And guess what? If you buy your tickets with Bitcoin, you save $100 on all the tickets and $1,000 on the whale pass. So if you want the VIP pass, the big kahuna, if you buy with Bitcoin, you save $1,000. That's a lot of sats. So go and do it right now today. Don't wait. Prices are only going up. This is going to be a can't miss event. Bitcoiners, I want to tell you about The Deep Dive. The Deep Dive is Bitcoin Magazine's premium market intelligence newsletter. This is a no fluff, hard-hitting, incredible newsletter going deep into the market, helping you understand what's happening with derivatives, what's happening on-chain, what's happening in macro, what's happening with the narrative, and what's happening with the tech. My man, Dylan LeClaire, is an absolute savant. He is making his name known in the Bitcoin community, getting shout-outs left and right, getting on podcasts left and right, and him and his team are bringing you everything that you need to know about Bitcoin. You don't even have to be on Bitcoin Twitter. You can ignore every other newsletter. This is the newsletter to rule them all. Go over to members.bitcoinmagazine.com, sign up today. And if you use promo code MACRO, you get a full month for free. You have nothing to lose. What are you waiting for? Sign up, see the incredible work that Dylan and his team are putting out. And if you don't like it, just unsubscribe. You don't pay a dime. But if you do, you know, it's going to be well worth the sats in investment in understanding Bitcoin and gaining the confidence to continue to invest in Bitcoin and making the right moves around Bitcoin. And it's going to be well worth every single Satoshi. Again, can't recommend it enough. That is members.bitcoinmagazine.com, promo code MACRO. Do it today.
So two things. One is, it seems like you have been extremely right about China for a long time. For everyone who is a FedWatch listener, Ansel has been bear China. We have been bear China just because of totalitarianism and top-down decision-making as just a base case. But Ansel has been bearish China for a while and saying that, you know, the globalization and leverage that got China to this point is all leaving. It's all depleting. And it seems as though he has been completely spot on. We are seeing this breakdown. And if you've been listening to this podcast for the last year, you've been ahead of this trend to know that China has been unsustainable. Something else to kind of just, again, like the energy crisis, like that's, I did not see that coming because historically we've seen China being this very energy rich country in general. I'm sure that the war with Australia, this trade war with Australia, and it's making a big difference here too. But it was interesting, the line, and I've heard this line multiple times, is like this sharp rebound in the consumer activity during COVID has messed things up or is not aligned with supply chains, right? And part of that is like, yeah, okay, household incomes have kind of gone up for a lot of people. And maybe that quote unquote stimulus is a market breakdown that's caused by manipulation, right? So maybe under normal market situations, that would not have happened. The market would have adjusted. People would have tightened up rather than started spending. But because supply chains were constricting and then central bank manipulation, they actually made the problem even worse because it's almost like the same effect of putting price caps in hurricane zones, right? When the reality is you want true prices so that way people allocate resources correctly. And that kind of just shows us that all of us are consumers that are living in this economic hurricane where we can't make good economic decisions. And the economy just doesn't add up because of all of this craziness.
Yeah, we talked about that when we went through Powell's Jackson Hole speech. He said that the stimulus checks rerouted demand from services to retail. And so you're putting more demand on different sectors of the economy. So actually, the demand for physical goods was higher after the pandemic or during the pandemic than before because people couldn't go out and spend money on services to get their dental exams, to get their massages, to get their go out to eat, whatever. They spent it on Amazon or wherever they spent it. So the durable goods demand went higher. And now that is also, I would suspect, I mean, I haven't seen any studies or data to back this up, but I would suspect that those are also more energy intensive. So if you are going to buy a physical good, it takes more energy to make that physical good, a $5 physical item, than a $5 service, right? And so you're inefficiently spending that money on a more energy intensive good. So yeah, this is going to have ripple effects all the way through many, many more months. It's amazing though that it has taken over a year for these things to really manifest in this type of spike in energy prices. But we will see how this goes. I don't think it can last very long, in my opinion, because people cannot meet the cost, right? There is a top to this where people can afford to buy the energy at that level. One of the stories that I kind of skipped over that we had on the notes was from the UK. They're having a energy crisis or a gas shortage at the pumps. They're comparing it to the 1970s oil embargo. The difference here is that in the 1970s was an actual oil embargo from the exporting countries. This time, they have enough gas to get to the pumps. They just don't have enough drivers to drive the damn trucks to go fill up the pumps. And then when people get there, when the trucks get there, people are going on social media and saying, there's a truck at this gas station. And then people just swarm it and they are hoarding. So there's a change in the behavior of the people in the market. And that has dramatic consequences. People don't understand that if you say that there's a shortage, there's going to be a shortage in some things because people will go out and hoard it, right? Just like the toilet paper, the famous Johnny Carson thing from, I believe it was the 80s. He had this fake story about a shortage in toilet paper. And then that manifested in real life because people believed him and they went out and bought toilet paper and there was actual empty shelves worth of toilet paper. So just people changing that stuff. And my last point here is something that Jeff Schneider and Emil Kalinowski have been saying on their podcast recently is that there's a change in mentality of this just-in-time inventory. So before this pandemic, you might order things to get it the day when you need it for your manufacturing process, right? Or, you know, you have to order this many every month and you use those up and then you go on and you order the next supply for the next month. But that's not how it's happening right now because people are worried about these supply chains. Maybe their one order was delayed by 2 months for some item that they needed, some input to their manufacturing process. So what do? They go and order 3 months worth, right? And so then the supply chain gets backed up because they are not doing just-in-time inventory anymore. They don't trust the supply chains. So they're ordering up front. And then all of that gets clogged because everybody's doing the same thing. And it's a self-reinforcing cycle. Prices get bid up just because of the change in behavior. This is not a monetary phenomenon. This is a change in behavior of people. So, okay, I'll get off my high horse here on this.
Well, I mean, again, like I think the reason why you stress this is because it's not the aspect that people stress, because people like to look and point their fingers at the bad man who is printing the money and like give them all the power and all the blame. And the reality is this is a complex, chaotic system. And that's why I think the correct view is to like say it is a complex, chaotic system. We can't understand what's happening. And that's what Bitcoin fixes, because Bitcoin adds a layer of clarity and concreteness and assurances to that chaotic system. And hopefully we can better read it and make economic decisions, because our current foundation is based on this one where it is expectation management from the Fed. And all they can do is expectation manage and try to make things work when really they're just making things more confusing and more difficult to understand amongst all the chaos that we are just living in general. So I think that, again, that's where Bitcoin comes in. And I think that that's where Bitcoin kind of touches into it. And so I want to pass it back to you. And where are you seeing Bitcoin amongst all of this?
Yeah, so this was the last thing on the outline that I had for today was, okay, so I just went on a big, long rant about how we're not seeing monetary inflation. We're seeing supply chain shortages. We're seeing shortages. And so prices will go up. But that doesn't stop people from making the inflation narrative. Right, making those points and talking about it in depth, saying, oh, there's so much money printing and stuff. So, and then as you see prices increase, then they seem right in the short term. And so I think that over the next few months, we will see significant price increases and this inflation narrative will become very loud. And I think Bitcoin will benefit from that, because that is the overarching investment thesis that most people have for Bitcoin is inflationary. Now, on the counter to that, Bitcoin is also a huge hedge in deflationary times, or in times where there is going to be a lot of defaults happening because of it's a counterparty less asset. There's no counterparty risk to Bitcoin. So I think on both sides, the people that see the breakdown in supply chains and the deflation and the contraction that's happening, the risks of default from counterparties, those people are going to have demand for Bitcoin. But then on the other side, the people that aren't as in the weeds and they are just hearing about printing of money and how prices are going up, they are also going to be buying Bitcoin because of the inflation narrative. So on both sides of this issue, Bitcoin wins. So I see the end of this year, there is going to be some massive movement in the Bitcoin price. What say you?
God, the timing is all too perfect, right? Isn't the timing all too perfect? I mean, we are all expecting it. Maybe inflation is the narrative that drives it. And maybe that is the incorrect or false narrative. And the true thing that's happening is just deglobalization and supply chain destruction. And then ultimately, despite inflation driving Bitcoin forward, Bitcoin is actually a hedge against both. And it all works out for the hodlers, right? That would be so effing beautiful. But generally speaking, I am currently subscribing to the view that this is just like any other Bitcoin cycle. There will be a blow off top. It's going to hit around end of Q4, beginning of Q1, was it 2023, 2022? So all the years are jumbling up in my head. I don't even know where we are right now. But yeah, I mean, that would make sense to me. And it'd be interesting if it is the inflation narrative that drives it up. And I want to hoard, to be honest. Like, I'm hoarding electronics. You know, I was hoarding at the beginning of the pandemic, but now if we're actually seeing the effects of all this stuff a year later, maybe this is when the supply chain breaks down. This is when you actually want to hoard. Maybe this is when you want to stash the steaks in the freezer and do your whole thing. So I might be heading to the store after this. But with that being said, I think that we can both agree that we're up for a crazy, crazy next few months. And I firmly believe that.
Totally agree. Couldn't have said it better. And man, I was going to say something, but I forgot what it was. So just wrap up the show here, Christian.
All right, y'all. Follow Ansel and I on Twitter. I'm at CK_snarks. Ansel is at Ansel Lindner. Follow Bitcoin Magazine. Share this show. This show has not nearly enough subs for the amount of signal that we're driving, although we do have quite the big community. So go share the show out. Don't be shy. And yeah, get ready for a crazy, crazy bull run ahead. Really excited for what's to come. And man, things are just getting interesting here in Bitcoin land. Peace.